Hey everybody out there in podcast land, Steve here with a quick prologue for this week's show. We recorded this episode on Wednesday, May 1st, 2019, and on Thursday, May 2nd, it was announced that Star Wars actor, the great Peter Mayhew, had passed away on Tuesday, April 30th. And because of the timing, we didn't get a chance to acknowledge that during the recording of the episode. So I thought I would take a moment to share a few thoughts with you before we start the show. By all accounts, Peter Mayhew was a wonderful and generous man, a family man, a Renaissance man. His contributions to the Star Wars universe are immeasurable. He helped create and owned the role of Chewbacca with so many subtle gestures and just the way he walked and carried himself as that character really helped define the character of Chewbacca and by extension helped define Han Solo and the rest of the universe that he was interacting with. Just a wonderful performance in the early Star Wars films and even later when he could barely walk. J.J. Abrams reached out to him to play his character Chewbacca in Episode 7, The Force Awakens, and he rehabilitated himself to the point where he could walk without a cane and move around the set and be a part of that film because he loved this franchise. He just seemed like a guy that you could hang out with and have a beer with and just a normal guy, very conversational and friendly. I never met him, sadly. However, Scott did have the opportunity to meet him, and we have a picture of Scott with Peter Mayhew up on our Instagram feed. It looks to be a few years ago, judging by how young Scott is in that shot, but I'm looking forward to hearing from Scott in next week's episode of the Wretched Hive podcast about his experience in meeting Peter Mayhew. We would like to express our heartfelt condolences to the Mayhew family and everyone who loved Peter. Peter, thank you so much for your contributions to the Star Wars universe. The Force will be with you, always.
Today's episode of The Wretched Hive is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download by going to www.audible.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E, in case you can't spell hive. Over 100,000 titles for you to choose from for your iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Wretched Hive podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Mos Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
Game of Thrones flat out copied Star Wars. Bunch of copycats.
Thieves.
And we are going to prove it to you tonight because you have found the Wretched Hive podcast for Friday, May the 3rd, 2019, episode 86 of the show. My name is Steve Baldwin and the gang is here. The boys are back in town, as the song goes. And we are fired up and ready to have a great show tonight. And starting us off, as always, the Wookiee co-pilot, Greg Lent.
Steve Stevens, it's so good to be here for another week of great Star Wars talk. You know, tomorrow, first of all, can we say happy May the 4th, everybody? Is it too early to wish everybody a happy May the 4th be with you? This is a Star Wars podcast after all, right, Steve?
Oh, my God. Well, some of it will be tonight. We got a lot of news to cover, but you're absolutely right. Happy May the 4th.
I am so glad to be here because if this is your first time joining us, you're in for a real treat because this is the night that everybody who has ever appeared on the Wretched Hive podcast comes back for one special episode and we all get together and kick Kathleen Kennedy's ass for ruining Star Wars for us.
And woohoo! You know, while we're at it, happy Revenge of the Fifth.
How about that? While we're there, yes. Yeah.
And we gonna kick her ass? What?
We're not gonna kick
this
her ass.
This is the Wretched Hive endgame, Scott. The Wretched Hive endgame.
Is it gonna be 3 hours?
We seriously have a lot of show tonight. We are gonna get to Star Wars. We've got Marvel to talk about. We've got Game of Thrones to talk about. We'll get there. We will get there. Also on the show tonight, he is a lifelong Star Wars fan. Ivansky. A little delay there, Scott.
Nice, nice. Thank you, Steve. You know what? I had a whole thing set up, but Greg just threw me off, man, with the Steve Stevens. Are we talking? Is that the guitar player from Billy Idol?
That was the highly coiffed guitar player from Billy Idol's band back in the 80s.
And Michael Jackson. I think he played on one of Michael Jackson's songs, too.
I do believe you're right. I cannot recall which one, because I know that Eddie Van Halen played on Beat It and Slash played on Dirty Diana.
That is correct.
And then I'm out.
Wait a minute. Eddie Van Halen played on Beat It?
No. Yeah. Was it Beat It?
Yeah, played the solo on Beat It. Yeah.
Okay. He was. I didn't know it was that song. Yeah, Slash was on one of the songs, and Steve Stevens and a few others. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here. I can't wait to talk. There's so much to talk about. We got Star Wars stuff. We got Avenger stuff. I'm pumped. We even got Game of Thrones stuff.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
it's a huge news week.
It's crazy.
Every week is huge on the Wretched
Hive. I thought Celebration was going to be the huge news week. It's this week.
Well, Celebration was nothing compared to this week.
This week's crazy.
Well, it was something, I guess.
Celebration is insignificant compared to the power of the Endgame.
Yes.
Also on the show tonight, he is the captain of the Nico Rodriguez!
Hi, hello. How are you?
Hey, bud. How are you?
How
are
we doing tonight? What's up?
Doing great.
This is going to be a very and This is going to be a very and other stuff kind of show.
Yes, yes. We've yes. got a lot of and other stuff.
Yeah, if you're tuning in for Star Wars tonight, listeners of the Wretched Hive, you can just skip 2 weeks ahead and you'll get another episode.
We are getting a lot of first-time listeners. Getting a lot more downloads lately, so that's great.
First-time listeners.
Mm-hmm. We love first-time listeners.
How about any of our long-time listeners, first-time callers, show up in the mailbox? That'd be cool.
In the old voicemail? That would be really awesome.
Yeah, and somebody, that would be.
Please, long-time listener, first-time callers. I want to hear from you.
And finally!
I went to the public library to try to make sense out of all the madness.
We have.
I mean, how can all this be happening?
Dave!
Obviously, the time continuum has been disrupted.
Under no circumstances.
English, Doc.
Should you ever.
This line represents time.
And I mean...
somewhere in the past, the timeline skewed into this tangent.
Ever!
The whole thing is my fault.
Call him.
Well, that's all in the past. You mean the future?
Whatever!
Harry.
Our only chance to repair the present is in the past.
Potter.
That's just total bullshit, man.
Oh, God. One of the greatest movies ever made.
And so
I don't know that I'd call part two one of the greatest movies ever
made.
That was part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was part two. And that right. movie that Thank movie you. Was total bullshit.
Thank
that,
you for correcting me. That I was referring to part one, which is almost flawless.
I live to correct you, Steve. But I have an important question. When did we get a speak and spell to do intros on the show? When did that happen?
Yeah, you know, that kind of threw me off too. I was like, what the hell?
That sounded like Microsoft Sam. Is that Microsoft Sam?
That was like pre-Joshua voice box technology from War Games in 83.
Oh, no, look Joshua, at the poll.
Would you like to
Dave
play a game
tonight? Wow.
So that was a random internet website that produces a robot voice.
Right. I thought maybe Lisa had some work done, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey,
wow.
Hey.
Ooh, wait, where's that? Here we go. There.
Oh, man.
Well,
so, hey, good afternoon, good evening, good morning to you, wherever, whenever, however you're listening to the show. Thank you to my favorite rebel scum, Stevie B, for giving me a fantastic intro there. Thanks to Greg Lent for actually pulling a movie that I recognized right off the bat for the sound quotes tonight. That was awesome. And as Nico alluded to, this is going to be a very heavy other stuff show because there's a lot. This was the pop culture Thunderdome this weekend. You had Endgame opening up for the first time. You had the big Game of Thrones episode. Taylor Swift dropped the new single. I mean, everything was going down. So there's
didn't she get
probably
a new cat too. Didn't she get a new cat?
She did get
like
a new cat. She got a new kitten.
Didn't you get a new cat, Greg?
No, shut up.
don't control. But Dave, I do have a Star Wars. I do have a Star Wars note before we get into all the other stuff, because as we sit here recording this, I believe this was a significant day in history. If I remember correct, May 1st, 1997 was the first time they did any kind of test screening for the original Star Wars with the general public seeing the film. Huh. And that is the day that we are recording this on, is May 1st.
Fantastic. My handy-dandy phone app that tells me today at Star Wars history was also the first ever Star Wars celebration in Denver, Colorado.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Wow.
Then.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was 1990?
Oh, you know, it doesn't say the year. That. It just says earlier the thing.
Okay. It's later. It's in the – it's – oh, God.
Come on, Scott. You got it.
Is that the one where – is that the one where it rained? It rained and literally washed, like, some of the booths. It was outdoors, and it washed some of the booths out into, like, a big muddy patch or something.
It was definitely – yeah, I think –
terrible storm.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that was Woodstock, not Star Wars Celebration.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
It.
Didn't Jimi Hendrix light his guitar on fire and –
and then didn't Limp Bizkit like do something, burned a stage down or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they burned their careers down. I would say it was during the prequels. I don't know which one though. I'm gonna say Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
So 2002, 2003.
Okay.
The internet, right?
Sounds like the Wretched Hive research staff is furiously typing to discover the
Callista, what
answer.
Year
or they're looking
Dave,
up porn.
Dave mentioned the pop culture Thunderdome, so I was like, he talked Taylor Swift. I thought Tina Turner was going to be dropping a new single right now. Come on.
Nope, we are not out from the ruins or out from the wreckage here, Scott. We are not in the Thunderdome.
Celebration 1 was held just prior to the release of The Phantom Menace in 1999.
Oh, I almost said 99. Damn it. Damn. I
was... Year of Our Lord, 1999.
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
What? You didn't say 1990.
And if you've ever been popped by Nico for no random reason, or a random reason, I guess.
Not a lot of people have.
Give us a call on the Wretched Hive hotline. That's 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. That's H-I-V-E.
In case you can't spell Hive.
You, sir, are goddamn right.
And you can also find us online at our new, updated, modernized, super cool website. Same URL.
If he does say so himself.
www.thewretchedhive.net. Go check it out. All of our shows are available for streaming. You can see all the show notes. You can see our ugly mugs. We're everything.
Speak
is
for yourself there, buddy.
Soon to be possibly some Wretched Hive swag. For purchase.
Nice.
Coming soon. Nice. Coming soon. But no, go check it out. The web development team has been furiously working on that webpage.
We have a team?
Yes, I've been working on it in my spare time.
Yeah. Steve and the Porg are working endless long nights.
Listen, me and that Porg do a lot of work together.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it these days?
And that's what they the kids
are. They work through a lot of stuff.
You can also find us on Facebook, although we don't recommend it, facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast.
Zuckerberg!
I waited for it this time. You can find us on Instagram, which is also linked to our website.
That's also right. Linked to Facebook, Zuckerberg.
Also Facebook.
At WretchedHive77. You can tweet at us at WretchedHivePod. Email us to show@thewretchedhive.net, and you can download our app on the Apple App Store. We're also on Google Podcasts, on Stitcher. Of course, the best way to listen to the show and review the show is on Apple Podcasts. So, lots of news to cover this week. We are going to hit on Star Wars eventually. Let's get started with the other stuff. Here it goes.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, Avengers Endgame broke all kinds of box office records this past weekend.
That's not true. There are some records it didn't break.
Not many.
It was not the biggest August opening of a movie in cinematic history.
Wow.
What a shocker. Wow. Okay.
Well, according to TheWrap.com, Avengers broke 144 box office records and counting. Now, as we record the show tonight, we record on Wednesday, so today is Wednesday, May 1st. As of today, not even a week out yet, the show has grossed $427 million
domestically. Domestically.
That's just domestic. Worldwide. This is, yeah, this is the Wretched Hive podcast.
No, oh, excellent.
Don't I wish.
You're holding out on us.
This is Avengers Endgame. Worldwide gross, $1.4 billion. That's with a B.
Woo! You just round that up to 1.5. It's 1.481. Let's just round that up to $1.5 billion.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
That is a lot of money.
The movie has been out for 5 days.
Turns
days.
Out that's pretty good.
Seems like it's gonna turn a profit. Numbers are. This is according to the Wrap. The numbers are still coming in for Avengers Endgame, and it's as its unprecedented box office success topples records left and right since the Marvel Studios film began rolling out in theaters last Wednesday. The global box office now has eclipsed 1.4 billion, as we mentioned. This includes. This is a couple days old. A $350 million opening weekend in North America, nearly $100 million higher than the previous record set by Avengers Infinity War.
Steve, I'd like to add a correction to that. It was $357. It was actually over $100 million.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
Dave, what is this? You mentioned it set almost all records. What? Put this into context for us. What does this mean in terms of... in terms of this series, and what does it mean for the film industry as a whole?
Well, I'd like to put it in perspective what it's done to the box office, but there is no perspective. This box office total is like we are watching, you know, a Bigfoot eat a unicorn from the bridge of a flying saucer.
Yes.
It's just, this is never going to happen again. You can put this record in granite, you can chisel it and hang it on the wall. It's never going to happen again. You're never going to have this mix of interest, of star power, of that many wide, you know, that many theaters playing it, and this much repeat business. So you talked about where it is after just, you know, 5 days being out. The weekend total is amazing. But what has caught my eye is what it's done on the Monday and Tuesday, mm-hmm. you know, the regular work days, and what the box office totals have been. It made better than $37 million on Monday, and it made $33 million on Tuesday, which are the only 2 weekdays we have available as we record this.
Right.
Those are the numbers that it needs to make and sustain if it's going to overtake The Force Awakens as the highest domestic box office gross of all time.
Yeah.
Because The Force Awakens had all this repeat viewing over a 2-week Christmas period where people were basically out of work, out of school, and had nothing better to do than go see that movie 7 frickin' times.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks like it's going to happen for Endgame.
Well, real
and
quick
I,
here. So
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, so Dave, you've seen it twice.
Yes.
Has anybody else in the room here seen it more than once?
No, just one time.
One time for me.
Yeah.
Nine times.
I don't know. Like, I saw Force Awakens in the theater... I think 3 times during its initial run. Then I saw it again as a double feature with The Last Jedi. I don't know if I'll go see Endgame again. I don't know.
We walked out of the theater, and immediately my son turns to me and goes, "Can we pre-order it?" Like he.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely get it when it comes out on video.
And I'm like,
sure.
Well, we can when it comes out, but we're not going to be able to watch it for a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while. But yeah, my kids loved it. I would love to just take the temperature of the room here. Scott, what did you think of the film? Just 30,000 foot level. What was your take on the movie?
You know what? It was fantastic. It was fantastic. It was a great ending. And I use that term loosely. I have a million things I want to say about it, but I have to say this. I came out of that movie and felt complete. 22 films. It did a great job. That doesn't mean I don't have some issues with it, but that's just normal criticism from being a comic book fan, from being a movie fan, there are some plot holes in here and there. But you know what? For the most part, they did such an excellent job with that movie. Dave pointed out one thing. The Monday and Tuesday box offices, I just want to say this, combined are over $70 million.
That's insane for the last week of April.
Yes.
On a Monday and a Tuesday.
On a Monday and
now,
Tuesday.
Now, was that a spring? This isn't spring break either.
Last week was spring break.
Yeah.
So seriously.
Nico, what was your take on the movie? High level, what did you think?
Stevie B, I need you to cue up your sound clip real quick.
Okay.
I need to hear those sirens.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, thank you. That's great. I'm really glad you brought this up. Spoiler Rific episode.
Yes.
And if you have not seen Endgame or Game of Thrones, just stop right now.
Yes.
All right. Yep. So here we go, throwing this up. You have been warned.
All right, guys, I gotta go now. Can you play the outro music? That clip is so long.
Don't say we didn't warn you. All right, so Nico, lay it on us. What did you Spoil like away. About the movie?
Holy shit. Iron Man is dead. Mm-hmm. Howard the Duck is back for a third time.
Mm-hmm. And who the fuck was that kid hanging out at Tony Stark's funeral?
Oh, I can answer that.
I know who it is, okay, now here's the better question, because I'm sure we all Googled immediately, who the fuck was that kid? Did anybody recognize that kid during the movie?
No.
No.
Okay. Slightly. Almost.
Not at all. I was like, what is Quicksilver from the X-Men doing here?
Well, bring me up to speed. Who was the kid? I'm sorry, I didn't look it up.
That's the kid from Iron Man 3.
Yes.
Yeah. That he was like with the whole movie. That's
remember
him.
When he crashes in like Indiana or whatever in Iron Man 3, and there's that little kid that he kind of creates a little bond with, and he helps it, and the kid like hides him, and he puts his suit there in the garage or whatever. Do you remember that kid?
Yeah.
Oh,
Tennessee,
so
I think
touching.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was him, you know, the same actor, and obviously it's been 6 years, and so the kid's like 20 now, so.
You know who? I just give all the credit to Feige. That's Kevin Feige all the way with that move there. Sorry, I don't want to take your spotlight here, Nico. What else did you think of the movie?
I think we all need to put our hands together real quick, please, and applaud the real hero of the movie, that fucking rat all over the dashboard.
that was the one difference. The Russo brothers said in every other 14 million reality Doctor Strange looked at, the rat didn't cross the keyboard and trigger Ant-Man out.
In just the perfect sequence to get Ant-Man out of there. That was, Iron Man's gone. But does anybody else realize the significance of the fact that Steve Rogers did not jump right back the present day after going back and returning the stones? Does anybody else realize the significance of what that opens up for the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
It opens up a lot of plot holes, to be honest, because that was the one thing that bothered me about it, and I didn't see a lot of mention about it online when I was clicking through all the headlines of, we're explaining this about the movie, we're explaining that. There was one bit in that scene that I'm like, why isn't anybody talking about it? Which is, if the shield was destroyed by Thanos...
Yes.
And Steve Rogers did not go back in time with a shield. How is there an intact shield for old Steve Rogers to hand off to Sam Wilson? Seems like a glaring plot hole. And I read an interview with the Russo brothers today where they said, yeah, that is interesting. There's probably a story there for somebody to tell.
Yep.
Beyond just that with the shield, the fact that, you know, the whole conversation with the Ancient One and Bruce Banner and how everything has to be exactly as it is, the exact same moment, you know, like Steve Rogers had to go back and put back, you know, all the stones at the exact moment that they left their time streams. Otherwise, all these branches open up. What the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done with the fact that Steve Rogers didn't come back correctly is it's opened up the multiverse.
Yep.
Because everything that he did and every choice that he made and every breath that he took outside of the original time stream opens up another branch into the multiverse of what ifs. And he lived an entire fucking lifetime.
Interestingly, we've known Peggy Carter got married since the Winter Soldier, because she's in a video clip there talking about it. She has never said the name of her husband.
That's true.
We have never seen a picture of her husband.
So was that not Peggy that they show him with at the end of the film?
It is, but I'm just saying it is a possible interpretation that that is how it was always supposed to be.
So she is mentioned in other movies, and I think possibly the TV show. No, not the TV show, because that was before the time. But she mentioned in the other movies that she did get married, but like Dave says, they never showed a picture of who the husband was.
Or mentioned him by name.
Yes.
And she had her own show, and Disney Plus does have a What If show coming out, and I believe the first episode has been announced as What If Peggy Carter Became Captain America.
You mean like What If Pepper Potts Became Iron Man?
You know, I jumped out of the S.H.I.E.L.D. show after a while just because I didn't find it very entertaining. Although I liked all the characters on. Well, I liked Ming Wen, and I liked Agent Coulson. I liked both of them on the show. I didn't really like anybody else. But the Agent Carter show, I really liked that show. I thought it was good.
It's a great show.
Yeah.
Great period piece show. But I have another thing coming off the end. And Nico, tell me what you think of this. So Fox was acquired by Disney. And everybody's like, oh, the X-Men can come in anytime soon. And Feige said, no, it's going to be 2023 or 2024 before we see the X-Men in any Marvel movies. So check this. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has, up until now, predominantly moved in real time with us, right? Infinity War happened in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And then Endgame jumps 5 years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
To 2023.
Got it.
So what if Feige is not saying our 2023? What if he means the Marvel Universe is 2023? They can drop him in at any point now, because Rocket in Endgame makes a point that when Thanos snapped his fingers, Earth was ground zero for the biggest explosion of energy the universe has ever seen. Mostly gamma radiation. That's why the Hulk is immune. That's why 5 years later, the Hulk does another such snap on Earth. And 10 minutes after that, Tony Stark does a third such snap on Earth. What if 2023, those three Infinity Gauntlet snaps give enough radiation that's what creates mutants in the Marvel Universe?
Oh, Jesus.
And is the explanation for why mutants have not appeared prior to this.
You just blew my small childlike mind.
It's what I'm here for, Steve.
All right. So, Dave, you prefaced that with it. That's awesome. You want to hear what I have to say?
Yes, I want to come back. Yes, because I kind of took your thunder in your spot here, and I apologize.
All right, go.
In that same train of thought, then, Mr. Potter, how do you explain the backstories of, and this is only naming two X-Men comic characters, of Professor Xavier and Magneto being through World War II and the Holocaust together? Entire backstory.
I don't know that I would at this point.
Yeah, or Wolverine, for that matter.
And Wolverine through the Civil War in America. Is this all something that's just, it's retconned? Is this, does Marvel, like, fresh start retcon the entire X-Men and Fantastic Four history that they've already had?
Wouldn't be the first time that Disney pulled that.
Well, let me add on to Nico's thought process here.
Thank you, Mr. Pop.
So far, we've had Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, which were both mutants in the original Marvel comics, but they are known as miracles in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Maybe certain mutants that we've known fall into that miracle category, and now the mutants can start to evolve from the snap.
Wow.
I don't know.
The only thing that really matters to me is, when does Deadpool fight Captain America?
Well, he's really old now, so it wouldn't be a fair fight.
No.
Yep. No, unless they fought in 1957.
Or unless they fought in 2019 instead of 2023.
Okay, I want to move on and get Greg's take, but before I do that, I need to go back to a comment that was made earlier about Steve Rogers going back and living an entire life, and that opens up the multiverse.
Yeah.
So do you guys think or do we have any inclination of whether he was just Steve Rogers when he went back and lived that second timeline of his life, or was he being Captain America through those years?
I would think it would just be Captain America. I think it would be his inclination, you know, to try and lay as low as possible.
I think if he did something, he would do it as something other than Captain America, knowing the damage it could do to the timeline if Captain America pops up.
A character who was kind of, I don't know, a nomad, perhaps.
Oh, you're reading my mind there.
All right, fill us in. Fill us non-comic book people in.
There's a very famous Captain America storyline from the 70s where Captain America became disillusioned with America in general. I think this was published right around the time Nixon was president. Draw your own conclusions.
Shocker.
Shocker. But he abandoned the Captain America identity and became a superhero called Nomad for, I think, 5 issues or 6 issues. And the Nomad character, you know, he eventually went back to being Captain America, and the Nomad concept was deemed pretty cool, and there have been a couple different incarnations of Nomad over the years, but
he wore a great cape.
He wore a great cape. It was a great 70s era cape. It was fantastic. And by fantastic, I mean horrible. Yeah, never awful. Never wear a cape if you're a superhero.
No cape.
Unless you're Batman.
God, the Marvel Universe is just so rich.
Yeah, it is.
It's just incredible.
Oh, that's not even the best time Steve Rogers quit being Captain America. My favorite storyline where he quit being Captain America was when the government tried to bring him back in to say that, hey, you know, actually that shield is our property, your identity is our property, you're going to start taking orders from us. And he said, no, I'm bigger than that, I quit. And the government hired another low-tier superhero to be Captain America, and he went off and adapted another identity called the Captain, and that built to an eventual climax in his return as Captain America. But I that was another fascinating exploration of what does it mean to be this character.
Wow.
That was in the 80s. Yeah.
That was in the 80s by the incomparable Mark Gruenwald. I think the longest running Captain America scribe ever to pen the comics.
Yeah. Scott has an image here on his phone. I'll show you guys.
Yep. That is Nomad.
Okay. Look at that neckline dropping all the way to his belly button too.
Yeah,
that's a hot look. So we can really take screenshots of that. We'll get them up on our on our webpage.
So there are people that are making comparisons to his kind of dull gray suit, which he wore in a previous one of the previous movies, as kind of being the Nomad suit. I'm curious if that's where they're going to go with that. I mean, because we all know it's not over.
All right, I have to go to Greg here. I want to get all your takes. Greg, high level, what did you think of the film?
Infinity War. I thought it was a super satisfying ending of 10 years of movie making, actually going back and touching on goddamn near every movie they produced in that 10-year period and giving just a little bit of tribute, a little bit of love to every movie that ever came out. Bringing back characters like Natalie Portman, you know, made a voice-only appearance, but Natalie Portman came back. That's how huge this was. They got Natalie Portman to actually come back and contribute something to this film. So
I know. The only thing that didn't happen was Ed Norton didn't pop out of one of those portals of Doctor Strange.
Right? That would have been awesome.
So kudos to them on wrapping it all up. It was a... well above average superhero movie, probably only in my top 25% actually not even top 25. It's in the top 10 of my Marvel movies. It doesn't make the top 5.
Okay. All right. Got it. And let's see, who didn't I ask yet? Dave, did you give your high level opinion? What did you think of the movie?
I loved it, but I do agree with Greg, probably not my favorite Marvel movie overall, but I absolutely loved it. It was a perfect end cap to what they've done for the last 11 years, and I think set up a lot of things to come for the next 11 years. We just don't realize it yet. Does anybody out there say Namor the Submariner?
Right.
Did anybody else pick those things up?
Can I just say something, though? We've all said this in our little reviews here. This is not the end film of Phase 3. There is one more film to go.
Yeah, Spider-Man's still coming out.
And that is Spider-Man Far From Home is actually the end of Phase 3, not the beginning of Phase 4, says Marvel's Kevin Feige. And this is actually at Newsweek.com. Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige has revealed that the Marvel Cinematic Universe third phase will conclude with Spider-Man Far From Home, set to release on July 2nd, right around the corner. Now, I wonder why that is. Any clues as to why?
I have a theory. Call me.
All right.
Go, Dave.
Mr. Potter.
Yeah.
Okay. So, at the end of Endgame, we see Peter Parker in the halls reunited with his buddy Ned.
Yes.
And here's the challenge with that. Peter Parker was dead for 5 years and didn't age. He's still high school. Everybody who was not wiped out by the snap should have aged 5 years.
Yes. Why is Ned still in high school?
So the Russo brothers said in an interview, Ned was snapped out. Ned and Peter both snapped out, so this was their first time seeing each other coming back. But really, did the entirety of Peter Parker's high school supporting cast get snapped out of existence? Mm. I have a theory. Far From Home is actually predominantly going to be a flashback. Peter Parker is going to be 5 years in the future, remembering all the things that he missed. And he's going to remember that last adventure that he had before he stowed away on a spaceship with Tony Stark and died on Titan.
That's a good theory. That's a good theory, actually.
I like it.
And that's why Nick Fury is in the movie, and it wasn't really a spoiler, like, oh, he survived. No, if this shit all happened 5 years ago, of course Nick Fury was still alive.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
That's weird to... I think on Marvel's part, that's a little confusing to the average consumer who's not thinking so thoroughly into all of these things to release something pre-Endgame.
After
the movie's released.
Well, they would have a framing sequence. You know, like an old school fill-in issue of a comic book where you had an issue in the can in case, you know, the team couldn't get it out on time. And then you quick draw up a, you know, 2-page front end framing sequence and a 1-page, you know, or 1-panel follow up so that this out of sequence story appears to happen in sequence with everything. They do a frame up where Peter's like talking about all this stuff and remembering his friends, they're not together anymore. And it's like, oh, remember that last time when we went to Europe right before all that shit happened? And then that's when the bulk of the movie goes down.
Yeah, that happens
because
quite a bit in the comics.
Because that's how he feels at the end of it, is even though he won, he lost most of his friends and he's very far from home.
Hmm. So what you're saying then, Dave, is that the entirety of the plot line of Far From Home has zero impact on the movie cinematic universe. Got it.
Yeah, just much like Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So there's a nice article at io9.gizmodo.com titled All the Questions We Still Have After Avengers Endgame. So there's about 20 here. I'm not going to read them all, but there's some of them are more interesting than others. But first question is, how did Captain Marvel find Tony and Nebula?
Yeah, that's kind of left out of the film.
Right.
So it is interesting. And there are scenes in the trailers. I did go through the trailer review article that we brought up that talks about the scenes that were changed or altered or were not changed.
Yeah, they CGI'd the shit out of those trailers, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, one had almost no changes, and then the rest had pretty significant changes just to throw us off. And I think it was one of the best marketing products that ever came out, honestly. I don't care how deceptive it was amazing to see what they did. Most of the material we saw was from the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film and had people speculating, including us, up and down every avenue that we could possibly think of. That movie, seriously, if you rewatch that movie and if you've seen it, you know they kill Thanos within the first 20 minutes of that film.
Yeah.
And at one point when I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, where the fuck are we going to go from here? They killed him and there are no more stones. And seriously, you have another 2.5 hours of film. And it was brilliantly structured. Seriously.
Well, you know, we all kind of speculated on where are we going to go with this. You know, there's, you know, Black Widow has 2 different haircuts. What's going to happen? There's obviously some kind of crazy time travel thing. But as soon as it popped up on the screen 5 years later, I was like, oh.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like I never even, you know, that's the most obvious thing. You do a time jump into the future. And I was like, I never even thought they would even consider that. It just did, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I said afterwards to Christine when we watched it that there were a lot of ways they could have told this story that would have been an easier structure or an easier story to tell. And they chose a very challenging way to do that. And I respect the hell out of them for
Not
it.
Not only respect them, Dave, but they pulled it off brilliantly. One of the biggest things that we've seen in the trailers that was altered was the look of Thor. Everyone, I mean, even the freaking poster has
Fat
the
Thor was the best.
Oh my God.
Love Fat Thor.
Lebowski Thor?
Oh, seriously. Brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Genius.
And doesn't change and through the whole film.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't skinny him up when he decided he wanted to come with. He was Fat Thor all the way through.
Right.
Now by the way, Thor dual wielding Stormbreaker and Mjolnir, I don't recall ever seeing anything like that in the comics. That was freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
Great.
Just amazing.
I think what was better than that was when he and Captain America were both going back and forth between the two hammers.
Yes.
Like both of them tag teaming both of the hammers back and forth on Thor. I thought that fight scene was choreographed to perfection.
Now
who does not want to see Asgardians of the Galaxy though? Come on.
I know.
I know.
Unbelievable that was a real thing and brought up in the movie. I just love those moments.
Now, was Thor part of the comics, or was that made up for this movie?
Wow, I wasn't not a Thor.
Not
fan.
Really. There was a storyline recently where Thor was no longer Thor. He was deemed unworthy.
Right.
And Jane Foster actually became a female Thor, and they did a spinoff title called The Unworthy Thor, which was kind of him just kind of drinking and carousing around. But I don't recall there ever being just like a fat, out of weight, you know, overweight
surfer bro Thor.
Yeah. You know, big Lebowski Thor.
Playing Fortnite.
The first time he turns around, you see that gut. It's just so funny. It's just so great.
Noob Killer 69 was fantastic.
Yes.
This guy's talking to me again. He's being mean.
Taika Waititi comes back to bring back Korg.
Yes.
Korg and me.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to get into the next article here too much, but I just want to mention there's a great piece at WashingtonPost.com about Marvel and Robert Downey Jr. and their incredible relationship, and how Robert Downey Jr. really came back from near oblivion, and really resuscitated his career. And really how the Marvel Universe and Robert Downey Jr. are inexorably tied with one another and really owe each other a huge debt of gratitude. So it's a great article at WashingtonPost.com. Go check that out.
He got fired from Ally McBeal, guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Greg, you've talked about this, like how he was just down on his luck and it was the perfect timing. And I think he got paid $500,000 for the first Iron Man movie.
Yeah, it wasn't so much down on his luck. It's just he was just in the depths. I mean, he was, you know, he was gripped in fucking drugs and just doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, he was in court how many times?
He what?
Hey, he was in court for how many times?
Oh, so many times. Oh, he randomly woke up in somebody's house.
Yeah.
So, quick question, real quick. Mr. Potter, you probably have this answer for me off the top of your head. Out of the 20-something Marvel movies that we have out now, how many of them did Robert Downey Jr. appear in as Iron Man?
9.
I want to say 10 off the top of my head.
It is 9.
9.
So, we have 3 Iron Man movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
4 3. Avengers movies. That takes us to 7.
Mm-hmm.
4 Avengers movies?
Avengers, Age of Ultron, Infinity War, and Endgame.
Okay, four.
Four.
Corrected.
Right. He was in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to 8.
In the limousine, right?
He was in the original Incredible Hulk.
Yep, in a cameo.
Was he in none of the Thor movies?
Chris Evans made a cameo in The Dark World.
Yes, that's true.
I don't think Tony Stark ever showed up in any of the Thor movies.
I don't think he did either.
No, he did not.
And he was in Captain America Civil War. That's 10.
That is 10.
That's 10.
No, and
suck it, Ivansky. It's 10.
How many total do we have?
22.
22.
So he was in The Incredible Hulk. He was in Iron Man 2, Iron Man, Spider-Man Homecoming, Captain America Civil War, Iron Man 3, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Age of Ultron, Marvel C Avengers, and Avengers Infinity War.
Yep.
So I think we can easily say, with no other contention for this spot, he is the most prolific Marvel actor for the entire studio.
Yeah.
Actually, it's 11. It's 11. I think he was in Chaplin as well.
He's my favorite Marvel hero.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, Less than Zero. Less than Zero. Can't forget that.
That's a brilliant film.
All right, so...
Great Marvel.
In the wake of this huge box office draw...
Jesus Christ, this box office.
Just unbelievable success. There are some dissenting opinions about Disney's propensity to create a lot of money flow. And there's
those are the people that liked The Last Jedi.
And there's been one strong critic of Disney on this show, and that would be Mr. Ivansky.
What? Okay.
And there's a member of the Disney family who's got your back on this, Scott. This is Abigail Disney, who is the granddaughter, great-granddaughter of, wait, great-grandniece of Walt Disney, granddaughter of Roy, came out, and she wrote, well, she had a Twitter story that she told criticizing Disney and Bob Iger about...
Bob Iger?
That's there you propensity go. There.
Bob Iger. Oh.
I'm like, that was Dave. He was dead on.
Dave's quicker than the sound clip guy. So I'm going to read a little bit of this. It's really interesting, and it made me think of you, Scott.
Okay.
This is Abigail Disney writing on her editorial is published by WashingtonPost.com. This past weekend, I seem to have struck a nerve with a Twitter thread about wage inequality at the Walt Disney Company. It's important to note that I speak only for myself and not for my family. The thread went viral partially because of my name, but I suspect it would be far harder to get that reaction if my name were Procter or Gamble. That's because the Disney brand occupies a special place in our economic landscape. Its profits are powered by emotion and sentiment, and yes, something as fundamental as the difference between right and wrong. I believe that Disney could well lead the way, if its leaders so choose, to be more decent... to be a more decent, humane way of doing business. And this is the part that got me here. I had to speak out about the naked indecency of Chief Executive Robert Iger's pay.
Bob Iger.
According to Equilar, Iger took home more than $65 million in 2018.
Okay.
That's 1,424 times the median pay of a Disney worker. To put that gap in context, in 1978, the average CEO made about 30 times the typical worker's salary. The growth of inequality has affected every corner of American life. We're increasingly lopsided, barbell nation, where the middle class is shrinking and very few, very affluent people own a great deal of the majority, and the majority have relatively little. And I don't mean to go political here, but this editorial...
It sounds like you do.
Editorial really, this is a member of the Disney family... criticizing Bob Iger. And so, and Gray, excuse me, Scott, you've been very critical of Disney for this. And I have to admit, I really didn't get where you were coming from till now.
Okay.
I think this editorial sort of was eye-opening for me.
Well, I'm glad a member of the Disney family opened your eyes to this. And sad to say that we have to kind of curtail this off of, you know, this talk about this wonderful film and what we enjoy, but it's a serious issue. So if you want to get political on this, which I don't want to, but there is a lot of political background to this, it's not just Disney that's doing this. It's quite a few large corporations, and that gap between CEOs and billionaires, people that are running all of this stuff, has increased. Like, that gap is just insane nowadays, and it's only getting bigger. I agree with her full on.
She goes on to say that in 2018, Disney gave more than 125,000 employees a $1,000 bonus. That's pretty good. But that $125 million or so was dwarfed by the $3.6 billion it spent to buy shares back to drive up the stock price and enrich its shareholders. Yeah. So just an interesting piece here at WashingtonPost.com. Check it out. It's time to call out Disney and anyone else that gets rich off of their workers' backs.
Can I ask a question here? And I'm not trying to be political.
Jump in.
Either, but just a perspective question. So I have read, and I don't have any means to prove this, but Robert Downey Jr. apparently has back-end deals with Disney for profit participation off of movies, because that's the only way they can afford to have him in films at this point. And I have read that he made $75 million off of Infinity War last year. Wow. Because of that.
That was Infinity War, not Endgame.
Right.
Infinity
so I'm just War. Saying, yeah. He made more money than Bob Iger as a result of that. So do we look askew on Robert Downey Jr. making that? Or is it okay that Robert Downey Jr. made that because he is a worker bee, if you will, as opposed to the guy at the top of the pyramid?
Is it it's savvy negotiation when we talk about Robert Downey Jr., but greed when we talk about Bob Iger?
And I agree with everything Scott said about the issues of income inequality in the country. Okay. I absolutely agree. I'm just saying where is the line drawn, and I don't actually have an answer to the question I'm asking.
Okay, yeah. I don't have a necessary answer, but I do have an idea, and I appreciate what you're saying, Dave, but also you look at things objectively, and I appreciate that, but take a step back and look at the difference between Bob Iger. Yes, and Robert Downey Jr. Bob Iger has an entire company, an entire worldwide company under his leadership. Robert Downey Jr. has himself and his brand and his family. So does he make a lot of money? Yeah. Does it kind of hurt sometimes that somebody's making $75 million off of back-end deals or whatever? I don't know the actual facts behind that, and that's something I'd like to research. But if that is the case, yeah, that's a little tough. But it's for a person who has worked hard his entire career to make a business or brand out of himself. Bob Iger has an entire company of probably, what, hundreds of thousands of people that can barely make their rent.
200,000 employees at Disney.
At Disney. Mm-hmm. Are we talking globally, or are we talking
in the whole company?
In the whole company.
Yeah. According to this.
We're not including Disney Uzbekistan, which is where all my good sources come from.
But again, that's my issue is if you run a company where people rely on you to live, I think there is a greater need. I mean, how much did you say he made? $65 million in 1 year? Mm-hmm. Okay, how much of that?
Bob Iger's.
Yeah.
$65 million in 2018. Nico, you were going to jump in.
Well, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I read that same article that you're quoting here. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong, and this point that I'm about to make could be moot. I'm pretty sure that she was mentioning park employees. Mm-hmm. Right?
She was specifically referencing park employees and like the people who work in the hotels, the janitorial staff in the hotels. Yeah.
So, in Bob Iger's defense, why is he paying bonuses and paying out park employees and hotel employees for things that he's doing in the movie industry, in the merchandise industry? Now, if the parks and hotels were making that kind of money, I could see it. But if he took that much home as the CEO of the Disney Corporation, which is an umbrella over a lot of different facets,
yeah,
why is he paying all of the company for things that other parts of the company are making him money for?
Well,
if movies and merchandise and that sort of thing are making him all of this money, and he's paying out all of that money. If Robert Downey Jr. is making more money making this one movie than Bob Iger took home, why is he going to pay park and hotel employees for something that they're not influencing the same way?
Well, I would argue that there are the companies do that all the time, that the profitable part of the company subsidizes the less profitable. Not to say that the parks aren't profitable, by the way. And with Disney, I really feel like those lines are really blurred. I mean, Star Wars Land is opening up here in a couple of weeks.
Right.
That Star Wars Land would not exist if it weren't for the movies. So I think I get your point, Nico, but I think the lines are a little bit more blurred than you're trying you're trying to make.
Yeah,
and Nico, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to add to your point a little bit, Dave, and this will kind of tie into what Nico is hinting at. I think, man, this is really weird talk for a Star Wars podcast.
Yes,
but so Bob Iger is like the overseer of this corporation, you know, and he's a genius executive. He took Disney to a spot where it was kind of low at the end of the Eisner years, and even though he's a disciple of Eisner, he, you know, really took the company to the next level, and kudos to him. He's oversaw the Pixar acquisition, he's oversaw the Marvel acquisition, he's oversaw the Lucasfilm acquisition. So he's made fantastic moves and deserves to be well compensated.
Sure.
But, you know, in comparing him to Robert Downey and what he makes on Marvel movies, people aren't going to see Marvel movies to thank Bob Iger for his contribution. People are going to see Marvel movies because they like to see Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
That's true. And I don't like to defend Bob Iger, but I will say what Greg's talking about. Let's even give him a little extra kudos. It wasn't the acquisition of Pixar. It was the complete fuck-up that Eisner did by getting rid of Pixar that Iger came back and saved that. Otherwise, they would have been a separate entity completely.
Mm-hmm.
They left because of Eisner.
Now, I just have one last thing to say. So we were granted, our show was, I reached out to the Walt Disney Corporation.
Stop
it. Oh, sweet.
Yes.
Stop it.
And they did send me a quote from Bob Iger about this issue. Here it is.
Don't get me wrong. I love making my money.
There you go. Bob Iger.
Bob Iger.
Sounds like he had a couple Colt 45s right there.
Don't get me wrong. I love making my money.
Guys, we have to talk a little bit about Game of Thrones. I don't have the music queued up, but maybe I'll put it in post.
Let's do
Steve,
it.
Steve, put the music in post.
Nico, yeah. I just want to say I tried so fucking hard to find a screenshot that I could put into Slack of the blue dragon eye when you said you hadn't seen that.
You know, we are of the same brain because I thought about doing the same thing.
I tried so hard, and I just didn't have the patience to figure out how to insert the picture into Slack.
Now, guys, Endgame had a huge battle at the end. Thanos versus everybody.
Everybody you could possibly imagine. Okay, Howard the Duck.
We're moving on.
But we can't move on. There's so much to talk about.
I have to say that battle had one of my favorite moments in the whole film, that moment when right at the end Tony looks at Doctor Strange and Doctor Strange doesn't do anything, just very slowly changes his hand to show the number one. This is the one time.
Yes.
That was such a powerful moment to me.
That was great.
Quick before we all go, did anybody else ask themselves the exact same single question that I did when the credits started rolling?
Is there going to
be after 3 hours of this Marvel movie, where the fuck was Adam Warlock?
Oh yeah, oh that's a great one too. There's a million.
Guardians 3. That's
Asgardians.
And maybe even Guardians 4. They like James Gunn hinted that he might even be saved for Guardians 4.
Adam Warlock wields the Infinity Gauntlet in the comic books.
I know.
In this moment, where was Adam Warlock?
Nico, wait a minute.
That's the comics universe. This is the cinematic universe.
Wait a minute.
God, Nico.
Listen, wait. Before Adam Warlock, you actually had somebody in the movie that wielded the gauntlet, and I thought they were going down that road until it took a drastic turn and we saw Tony do what he did. But Nebula actually puts on the gauntlet.
That's right, in the original Infinity War. That's right.
And they made her a major character in this film, And I was like almost freaking out during this movie going, oh my God, they're going to have Nebula.
All right.
Put the gauntlet on.
I have to make a confession.
Yeah.
Let's hear
it. I think Nebula is freaking hot.
Yeah. Wait.
Is this gold forehead or no gold forehead?
Yeah, I want to know, Dave.
I'm not that fussy.
Dave, with every piece intact, or when she's all being strung pulled apart? I mean, come on.
Well, Dave, I invite you to watch some Doctor Who. I think they're seasons 4 through 7 with Karen Gillan. They're all really good.
I am not saying Karen Gillan is not attractive. I'm just saying I think Nebula is really hot. I just that mean mug, that just look of disgust she always has on her face.
Damn.
You know, like when War Machine's like, oh, so he's an idiot, right? And she just gets that look of disgust and just. Yes.
You and circa Star Wars stories, Han Solo, Lando Calrissian, both love robots, Dave.
Yes. What's going on there?
Or when Gamora's like, I chose this man, and Nebula's like, well, it was him or a tree.
Brilliant line. Man.
I think you have some agreements in the room here, Dave.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what's wrong with me, but yeah.
So a couple of quick points before we get into a
sure,
other
keep
things.
Making your points. Seriously, it's not like I want to move on or anything.
But seriously, another great moment was seeing the Steve Rogers moment wielding the hammer.
I mean,
that was absolutely brilliant.
I'm wielding the hammer right now.
I am too, right in front of Steve.
I am so
actually.
Glad your camera's turned off.
Yeah.
And so, and
it's the only thing in the Lent house that is right now.
And he was able to do that because he was worthy.
Strangely,
of
it's also called Mjolnir.
Okay.
Yeah, he is worthy. That it's a great comic book moment. One of my favorites from Thor 390, when Steve Rogers is the captain, wields the hammer for the first time.
Yes.
And I was very touched that one of my coworkers was seeing Endgame with her fiance last night, and she was like, why is Steve Rogers able to lift the hammer? And he's like, oh, because he's worthy. And she's like, that makes no sense. And she texted me because she's like, I trust Dave more than I trust you, fiance person.
Well, and it's also a payoff to Age of Ultron, where he's the only one in their little party scene that's able to budge the hammer. And and Thor gives him a look that, like, wait a minute, because this, the only time it ever gave a budge was when Steve Rogers tried to lift it then.
And that Thor reaction is just gold in that movie. That quick take of the fuck just happened.
That and when Vision like actually picks it up and hands it to later. But.
Yeah.
Right. So I love that. And my take on the end, because we all know if you wait around at the very end, there is no more.
You're right.
End sequences.
Yeah.
My feeling, and even though I agree with Dave's theory on Spider-Man, is that Spider-Man is actually the end credit sequence. And it makes more sense now based off of Dave's theory that it could just tie everything up. And it's going to be a 2-hour end credits sequence for the movie. There is one drastic flaw with the many others that we saw. I wanted to say that no human can actually pick up a stone, but the whole end sequence was all of them kicking around, picking up, and throwing the entire gauntlet around. And I thought that was a little odd. So,
well, they're not touching a stone.
It's a little bit of a MacGuffin, you know, that they can carry the gauntlet but not carry the stone. So,
Just found it kind of funny. But still, an amazing.
That was movie. Lost. That was totally lost on me. I have to admit.
But the bigger problem was, how did all those fucking Avengers survive having the building blown to shit and gone by Thanos? Like, really, none of them are hurt by
the missile? I had the same response.
Yeah, okay. Ant-Man was standing right in front of that blast.
Yes. I know.
I want to ask the comic book nerds in the room real quick one question before we move on, Mr. Steve Baldwin.
Okay.
X-Men 42.
I'm going to go get another beer.
This is a this or that answer, and I want from Dave, Scott, and Greg, just a this or a that. Dave, do we see Adam Warlock first, or do we see... Oh, shit, and now my brain is fucking farting because of the beer.
Yeah.
X-Men?
No.
Fantastic Four?
The fucking... creature dude with the horse face in the Thor comics.
Beta Ray Bill. Adam Warlock first.
Adam Warlock first. Yeah.
I will also say Adam Warlock, so I will throw out a theory as well. I want to build on that real quick. Do we see Adam, comic book nerds, Greg?
Yes.
Nico? The other guy, Scott.
Oh.
Do we see that?
It gets around 11:30, and we all start to get a little loopy.
Yeah,
frankly.
White privilege. Let's go. Give me your answer. Let's go.
Do we see Adam Warlock first, or do we see old Buckethead Nova of the Nova Corps first?
Hmm. Oh, I at this point, I think Nova's going to be a throwaway character at best, unfortunately. Yeah. I know that he's gotten quite popular the past 10 years or so, but I think he's just a throwaway character in the, you know, because they established the Nova Corps already, and they got their asses handed to them. So yeah. They didn't even get an appearance in the Infinity War. They just got an honorable mention.
Or in the end game, they didn't come back as the entire Nova Corps to try to kill Thanos at the end, which they could have done. They could have brought the entire Nova Corps back to try to take out Thanos.
They could have if Doctor Strange knew about them, which I don't think he would have.
Yeah.
That's why Captain Marvel makes a late entrance, because Doctor Strange didn't know who she was to try to bring her back.
Yeah. I'm going with Adam Warlock as well. I think Nova is now... just like Greg said, a throwaway character. Although I want to point something out real quick to Dave. The building, the whole sequence when they destroy the Avengers headquarters. Come on. Was that not one of the greatest throwbacks to the Hulk holding up all of the building?
It throwback to the cover of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars from 1984. One of the Russo brothers' favorite storylines and what they have publicly said. That's the movie we want to come back and do.
Seriously, go ahead.
I'm just commenting on Dave's thing, and I'm salivating at the thought of a Secret Wars movie.
That's
done by those guys. Hells yes.
Yes, and this is, I'm going to say this because I love you guys as much as we talk shit about each other all the time on the show.
No,
I'm watching the movie, and I literally had a fan geekgasm and yelled out Greg and Dave's name when the Hulk was holding up the building. I'm like, Secret Wars! I swear to God.
Don't you do that like every Monday night?
Every Monday night I actually scream out Greg and Dave's
down
name.
To the strip club.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had my own little geek out moment, and I don't know if you guys got it or not, but at the appearance of Yvette Nicole Brown, who was the young lady who was in the elevator back in 1970 that recognizes Steve Rogers as being somebody who's not supposed to be there, as a member of the show Community. And the Russo brothers have done is they've managed to sneak almost every member of Community into their movies because they got their start directing episodes of Community, which is a great show.
There were two Community members in Endgame. Do you know what the other one was?
No, I admit. Who was the second one?
The security guard.
The security guard was... what's his name?
Oh, Ken Jeong. Ken Jeong, that's right. Oh my God, I forgot. Because he was the teacher on Community. That's right, I'd forgotten about that.
That's why there was such a laugh when that character came up. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I will say the moment that really got me, and it's because of everything I've gone through this year, but where Tony Stark gets the unexpected last conversation with his father back in 1970.
Brilliant.
Just absolutely slayed me. Just destroyed me.
Yeah. It was wonderful. And I felt for you, man. I really did. It was touching. It really was.
It was fantastic. And we meet Jeeves.
Who we've seen on the show.
Jarvis is a regular character on Peggy, on Agent Carter.
That is the first
time that a Marvel TV character made an appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Which I thought was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say, trick question, the three of you are wrong. We already saw Beta Ray Bill in Thor Ragnarok as a bust on the giant statue.
We didn't see Beta Ray Bill. We saw a bust of his head.
That's right.
Yeah. We saw his likeness. So,
and I don't want to see Beta Ray Bill's bust. And
if you're going that far, we've already seen Adam Warlock's cocoon in Guardians 2, which came out before Thor Ragnarok.
That's correct.
That is not his
likeness. Yeah. In your face, Nico.
That is
in your millennial face.
And his name was mentioned.
God, Nico.
That is not his likeness. We didn't see his. It was alluded that was him.
I think Nico's got the this hots for hot blonde guys that are from outer space.
Not the fucking right, background, okay?
This or that. America's ass. Chris Evans or Scarlett Johansson's?
Yes.
Is both acceptable in this case?
Yes. Both.
All of the above.
I mean, first of all, there's Scarlett Johansson, so that's a given. But having Chris Evans talk about his own ass.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was good.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the tweets of Endgame spoilers with no context?
No.
You guys need to look up
Avengers Endgame
spoilers with no context. And it's just people posting pictures of ridiculous things that if you've seen the movie, they make sense. If you haven't seen the movie, they don't make sense. But there are definitely plenty of firm buttocks with American flag bikinis on.
That's awesome.
There's a million things to talk about. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that was kind of the theme of my intro for Dave tonight, or the sound clips for Dave tonight. I know we're going way beyond the pale right now, but that was the theme is that it's all Back to the Future stuff, which is referenced heavily in Avengers Endgame, but means nothing to the rest of the show here.
Which is so brilliant, by the way. Thank you, Greg, for that.
Back to the Future is bullshit.
But okay, there is one other.
And that's hilarious to me because I said there will be a Back to the Future homage in this movie, and I was part right in that they reference it, but I was wrong in that they just completely skewer it and make fun of it and pound it into the ground.
Yeah, they really do, and it's freaking hilarious. But I want to say that there's so many Easter eggs. There is one brilliant Easter egg which we all have actually mentioned on the show. Captain America in the last couple of years became a Hydra agent. And he makes reference to that in the movie when he says that in joking Hail Hydra moment. And I thought that was...
Uses it to cover his identity. Yeah.
Right. Just because that happened in the comics doesn't mean that's what they're saying is actually happening.
Nico. God, somebody, cue that thing up. God, Nico!
God, Nico!
Of course. But I'm just saying...
When did this episode become us just yelling at Nico? When did that happen?
Usually the opposite
is
true.
When I showed up.
Yay, you son of a bitch. Mm. Let's go.
Don't call my mother names.
Oh, I'm sorry. Damn it, he's getting...
You're going to have two problems here tonight.
Apparently I do. All right.
Guys, we have made it through the entire show with zero Star Wars stories.
Oh, damn it.
First time ever.
I told a Star Wars story at the top to cover us.
Oh, all right. This is an other stuff episode. That's true. We've never had it this slanted, though. We've never done a 99% non-Star Wars show.
It was a huge week, and we haven't even touched on Game of Thrones, which was awesome.
Could you see it, or was it too dark for you?
It was very dark. It was super dark.
Wait.
Super dark.
I know Dave has the 4K television, right? Or 5K, whatever it is. 20K. What are you up to, Dave?
It's a 4K OLED
TV,
and it looked magnificent on it.
I was going to say, the blacks were probably brilliant on yours, but if you really want to see clarity on it, change your settings to dynamic if you have it. And you will see it a lot clearer. It'll look more like Helm's Deep from Lord of the Rings, Two Towers.
So. I kind of felt like the producers were like, there's so many special effect shots in this episode. We need to have this battle at night. We got to cover some of this. Yeah. Too expensive.
But it's funny you reference Helm's Deep because I was waiting for Gandalf to show up at morning of the third day of that battle to save everybody.
Yeah, it felt like it, right?
Can somebody explain to me why the Red Mistress had to die at dawn?
Because her whole purpose in life was to win the Great War. And once the Great War was won with the defeat of the Night King, there was no reason for her to go on living.
Is that stated in the show? I don't remember.
It's in the books.
Okay. That would have been nice to clear that up for some of the TV people. I've been arguing with people about this.
She said she was going to be dead by dawn, right on the front end.
She said she was going to be dead by dawn. Yeah, she was only being kept alive by that stupid necklace. And do you know how heavy that thing is for an old person?
Apparently, really fucking heavy.
Yeah, it's got the weight of 1,000 souls in it because she's like... sucks them all off and
there
puts
you
them
go.
In
there.
That's right. Wow, she sucks them all off?
It's actually, take it as
God,
you will,
Nico.
She sucks them all off.
Actually, Leech Dong is my new band name, so.
That, Okay, so I'm taking it everyone loved the Game of Thrones episode.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Okay, but
it was all right.
It was possibly the best episode of the entire series.
But also
heavy emphasis on.
And awesome. I'm with Greg on this, but I'm also going to be in the same boat as. No, it's not.
All right, we're gonna end the show really quick. We've got a Star Wars Choices lined up.
Okay, let's do that.
That deals with the very issue you guys are bringing up. There was a huge battle at the end of Endgame, to bridge from the previous conversation, and of course the battle for Winterfell in Game of Thrones. That leads us to this, people.
It's a little game we like to call Star Wars Choices.
Think of a hard choice you'll face in the near future.
You must choose.
Okay, would you rather be intimate with a Wookiee?
Choose wisely.
Or be intimate with Ula, but Jabba gets to watch?
I just assumed he's a Wookiee.
See, there is a little bit of Star Wars we're going to talk about. Star Wars Choices!
Yeah, it's a Star Wars Choices, but nothing related to Star Wars.
Not related to Star Wars. Which is the better battle? The battle at the end of Endgame, Thanos versus everyone, or the battle for Winterfell in Game of Thrones? Scott, I'm starting with you, because you look totally confused.
Nope, not at all. All right. Not at all.
That's his natural face, Steve.
Oh, sorry. Oh, man, Scott, what say you?
It's an easy choice.
Okay.
It's Endgame.
Endgame is the better battle.
Yes.
All right. Dave?
Endgame is the better battle. And I'll even go so far as to say the Battle of the Bastards was a better battle on Game of Thrones.
I agree with Dave with that.
Okay. All right. Nico?
I'm going to say the Battle of Winterfell.
Okay. Now, why are you going against the grain here?
He's Nico. Have you met him?
Yeah, but I have my reasons, and they are legitimate. The Battle of Winterfell was... It felt like a real battle. You never knew for certain at any one point that the side you wanted to win was going to win. No, you know, there was definitely the moments of despair, and there was no real clear, like, oh, you know... The Winterfell Guardians have this chance. It was always against them the entire time. And the main reason why I'm going to choose the Battle of Winterfell as the better battle is because it was a lot less campy. The last battle in Endgame felt really campy. There was a lot of stuff that they put on screen that felt gratuitous. Like, they had to do this. The shot of... You know, all, and don't get me wrong, go women powers, but like the one shot of all the women from the MCU walking down in their battle poses it felt really gratuitous. I felt like they could have done that and framed that in a different way that didn't feel so shoved down your throat. And like the fight scene in Endgame was awesome. It was great. And there was a lot of really cool moments. But I felt more on the edge of my seat, more unknown, more anticipation in the Battle of Winterfell than in Endgame.
Okay. Well argued. You made some really good points. Greg, what say you?
Yeah, I'm sexually aroused. I'm not going to lie.
I am 110,000% Team Nico on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Endgame and came home, immediately watched Game of Thrones right after it. So I saw both of them on Sunday, back to back. And I came out on an Endgame high saying that was really, really cool. And then I watched The Battle of the Bastards. And everything that Nico's talking about, the tension of that whole episode, the way they built it up, the way they slowed it down, the way they showed you different portions of the battle, it went from like hardcore war movie to horror movie to just action, all out, balls out action, to just, you know, crazy magical dragon riding shit. It was everything you ever wanted out of an episode. Endgame, it was great. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about it. But the everything it didn't feel like there were any stakes to that battle. It was everybody that has ever been in a Marvel movie. Some people have even just seen Marvel movies. I think all of us were in that battle at one point, everybody against Thanos, and it was a foregone conclusion what that was going to be. Yeah. Now, yes, the Winterfell battle, also a foregone conclusion, but they made you believe that they could lose, where I never felt that with Endgame.
I'm a little confused. I think I'm going to switch my vote to Greg's first answer, that I'm with the Battle of the Bastards. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Or
Battle of Winterfell.
Oh,
Battle of Winterfell.
Damn it.
Sorry, right, never mind. Sorry.
I'm back to Endgame. I'm sorry.
All right, so that's 2-2. My vote goes for Battle of Winterfell.
Wow.
Yep. Battle of Winterfell wins. I totally agree with all the points you made. I think it was obviously, you know, less, well, you can't say it was less gratuitous, but I completely understand your point, Nico, there. It was very real. But Greg's point really brings it home to me. It's like there was a moment that I thought that it was going to go the other way. I was literally worried for Danny. And in a show where you know that there's no way they're going to kill off Danny and you're worried for her safety, it was wonderfully done.
I was never worried that Danny was going to die. Seriously.
Did we watch the show?
Well, did you ever think that Thanos wasn't going to get killed?
No, I knew he was going to get killed. Right. I read the comics.
Sorry, Nico. Go ahead.
that's the thing about Game of Thrones is you never know who's going to die. Right. That whole scene with Arya in the library in Winterfell running from the White Walkers and like slipping through and throwing the book and all of that shit.
Fantastic.
I was like near hyperventilating.
Really?
I was like,
so,
yes.
Hang on.
That was
Nico,
such a good scene.
Can I build on what you're saying? Real quick to explain part of my disappointment with the episode.
Unleash, the game, Dave. Please, unleash.
Bring it in.
No, I want to build on what Nico's saying because it kind of hits on it. I was actually expecting it to be a much bigger bloodbath than it was.
Yes.
And that left me with a sense of disappointment and a feeling of letdown. When you say...
Was I ever
in doubt for me that Thanos was going to die at the end of Endgame? Honestly, no. I knew who was going to win, and I got what I expected. I got my, you know, I got my ice cream sundae.
Yep.
And I was revved up for a bloodbath and, you know, an Arya to die or a Sansa to die or something like that. And virtually all of the big characters that I really care about survived.
Yep.
And that was disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm. I can see where you're coming from. I'm pretty sure Theon Greyjoy was like the only like super big name.
Nope. And Beric Dondarrion.
Nope.
Mormont.
Right.
And Jorah Mormont.
Yeah.
Oh, Jorah Mormont.
Still.
Yeah.
But still, none of these people were like, oh, you're going to wind up on the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought there was going to be a bit of a winnowing coming out of this.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, let me pose a this or that question to the group. Who's going to die first?
Who cares?
Danny, or Jon Snow?
Daenerys. I'm going to go with Daenerys.
Agree. Daenerys. Steve? If one of them goes, it's Danny.
Because screw the women.
Scott, what do you?
Let's go with Nico first on this one.
All right, Nico, you're up.
I think Tyrion's the next one up.
Okay, that wasn't the choice, but I'm going to allow that.
Wasn't one of the choices, but thank you for playing.
That wasn't one of the choices, but I'm going to allow that because I like you.
And Margaret.
Scott?
Honestly, I don't care, but here's why. I'm going to say this. I think it's honestly...
That I'm not going to allow.
Okay, that's fine. But here's... So let me give you an answer, even though I don't care. I have a lot of problems with this last episode. But because of that, it's like, what are we building up to? The whole series has been building up to the great battle. Mm-hmm. It's done. Why do I even care?
Lasted one night.
Three episodes left.
Right. I don't care. The great battle's done. The show told me what's going to happen. I don't care about Cersei. I don't care about anybody. But if you want to know who I think is going to die, I'm going to say it's going to be Jon, because the jealousy that's already been implemented into the character of Daenerys was clear when they had the revealing moment when he tells her who he really is. So I think Jon is going to die because she wants the throne. And John doesn't.
All right, hang on. I got to bookend this. There we go. All right, now, guys, I started the show I started the show off saying that Game of Thrones flat out copied Star Wars. So here's your Star Wars story of the night. In the Battle of Winterfell, at the very end, of course, we know, spoiler alert, Arya kills
everything.
Right. She makes little ice cubes out of all the White Walkers. The way she does it, when she's jumping towards the Night King's back, he spins around, he grabs her knife hand, grabs her throat, leaves her other hand free, she drops the knife into the other hand, stabs him, game over. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in Star Wars.
We saw it with Rey.
Rey did the same maneuver against the Praetorian guards.
Shockingly,
in a movie called The Last Jedi, Scott.
I was going to say, Arya obviously has great taste in movies because she likes Star Wars and The Last Jedi.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow, yeah. It's shocking. She made it through a horde of whites and White Walkers secretly to just get right up on top of them.
She was trained to be as quiet as a shadow.
God's sake.
Quiet as a cat. Quick as a cat.
We're going to have a Game of Thrones recap. You're not letting
me talk. Wretched Throne.
The Wretched Throne. Wow, it is nerdgasm time at the Wretched Hive podcast.
We're doing the second one after this, right?
We got to get to all the Star Wars stories I have on the list here.
Wow, we didn't even talk about Taylor Swift.
No.
Thank God.
Or some her of this cat.
Well, Taylor never. She's always in style. So we'll be good next week, Taylor Swift.
I'll talk about Taylor's pussy next time. I'll talk about Taylor's pussy. Wow.
Can we talk about Greg's pussy?
Thanks for setting me up for that. If you've ever talked about Taylor's pussy, give us a call. Leave a message on the Wretched Hive hotline. That's 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. That's HIVE, in case you can't spell Hive.
Goddamn right.
You can also find us online. Go check out our new website. It's sort of set up like a blog. We'll be posting a lot more, putting stuff on our webpage. When we say we're actually going to put a picture up on our webpage, we're actually going to do it now.
Oh, thank God.
It's
only been 2.5 years.
You did a great
job. You put a picture of Taylor's pussy up there on the website.
When we say we're going to put things up, is it going to be us or is it going to be Callista?
Very likely me or Callista.
Yeah.
Although I will give you guys rights. I'm not sure if I want to do that, actually. It's looking pretty good. You can also find us at facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast, although we don't recommend it. Also, find us on Instagram,
Zuckerberg.
TheWretchedHive77. Email show@WretchedHive.net. And what else? You can find us on Google Podcasts, on Stitcher. We really appreciate the reviews on Apple Podcasts. Throw us a few stars up there. That would be much appreciated. Guys, episode 86 is in the books. Any final thoughts?
With Anthony Daniels as C-3PO.
Yes.
God, Nico.
I guess there are no final thoughts.
Guys, have a wonderful couple of weeks. We will be back on, May 17th with the next episode. And until then, may the Force be with us all.
May the Force be with you.
That's just total bullshit, man.
Revenge of the Fifth, coming up soon.
Or is it Revenge of the Sixth?
Hmm. Mm.